Sound check here. Check. 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 Good morning and welcome to the Moose Turd Cafe. Didn't get our little post out this morning, but, you know, things happen here on the enlightenedradio.org. Today is March the, what is it? Is March the 6th?
No.
Yeah, it's March the 6th. 2018, and the cafe is open. We're serving a good old shit sandwich here, as well as some better fare coming up. Just stay tuned to the radio, and you'll be all there. We're going to start out this morning with a little some kind of different thing we got going here. I'm trying to decide exactly which one I should do, but we'll do what's a good theme song to open with this morning? I'm looking at some Bob Seger, kind of going way back. There's a lot of stuff I really do like by him. question is, do I really want to play it this morning? We could start out with let's start out with a good old Union song here. My sisters and my brothers. Let's keep that one. Let's keep that one going here. There we go. Railroad Earth, and this will be our little theme song opening up this morning when I get my coffee refilled, and we'll be right back.
Yeah.
Let us do the very best that we can while we're traveling to this land.
Yeah, walk together, little children, through this world of trouble. My sisters and my brothers, popularized by the Jerry Garcia Band, written by Charles somebody, a member of the band there for a while, but not written by Jerry, but I think it's one of the solid spiritual tune. And welcome to the Moose Turd Cafe. Just had a little bit of, you know, Dr. Lecter's coffee. He says it's coffee. I don't know. Would you believe anything that Dr. Lecter said? We all not really. you could believe it, I suppose. There's probably an abstract truth in there somewhere. Well, slightly different than a real truth, but perhaps distantly related. In other words, there's a place in the universe where almost any statement is true. We could start with that assumption, and then, you know, it becomes difficult to falsify anything. Well, it's true on Mars. Well, actually, we don't know. We're just going to go with the assumption that everything you say is true someplace, and see how we go from there. Welcome to the Moose Turd Cafe. We're going to start out this morning with Richard Wolff's economic update. I like to keep the economy as part of a central news part of the thing. There's a lot of stuff going on in the news. I'm not going to turn this into a news program right now, unless I get somebody to call in and really wants to talk about it. Maybe we'll hit the highlights a little bit later, but I like the Dr. Wolff's professor of economics at the, he may be retired now. He was at the New School for a long time in New York City. And he's always been, he's a solid Marxist, okay? Now, by solid, there's a lot of people that are call themselves Marxists that Marx would run away from. having been a student of the old mole at one point. I finally started to get him, you know, when I get rid of the dogma surrounding him, and you start to get him, and he's a powerful thinker. But anyway, and you'll find that in some decent economists that have, been around for a long time and are, they know their material, okay? Richard Wolff falls into that category, and I can find his blog here for the day. He does one a week about, and I don't do them all, but I do some of them, and it's I appreciate the effort he puts in. He plans it pretty well, and let's see. We got to get here we go. I think this one's called A System Rigged Against U.S., okay? Updates on how Democrats helped destroy their party by backing campaigns against labor and left candidates after 1945. Well, this is going to be, it's going to be a little bit of a political thing there. Talking about the jobs created under Obama, Trump, lobbying, and Trump's swamp, deregulation, and risky bank lending, worker co-ops to reduce inequality, and an interview with attorney Leonard Goodman on how the legal system supports a rigged system. So that's going to be some of the talk here today. It'll probably be ho-hum for many of you who have recently been dealing with the system. But we're going to give it a try here. Okay. It's supposed to be making a noise, but the question is, is it? I'm not actually hearing it making noise. That's troubling, isn't it? All right, why isn't it making a noise? Do we have something turned on? Oh, we do. I got something. Okay.
And that I hope has prepared.
Oh, I know what we got going here. We got more than one thing happening. You know, occasionally we have a little issue here on the engineer gets confused with the host, and we're going to start over again with Dr. Richard Wolf, and here we go.
Welcome, friends, to another edition of Economic Update, a weekly program devoted to the economic dimensions of our lives, jobs, incomes, debts, the interest rates we pay, those our children are facing, and those coming down the road in an economy that is changing and changing fast. I'm your host, Richard Wolf. I've been a professor of economics all my adult life, and that I hope has prepared me to offer you these interpretations and analyses of what's going on in the economy around us. My eyes were caught recently by an article in New York Magazine that in turn was based on a research paper produced by the National Bureau of Economic Research. Both the National Bureau paper and the New York Magazine article were published in January 2018. And they ask and they try to answer the following question. Did the Democrats and the Democratic Party let unions die? I want to deal with the question in terms of focusing on one word, let. That implies that the Democratic Party was a passive kind of observer. Maybe it should have intervened, but in effect it let something happen. The implication being it could have and it would have happened anyway, and they just let it happen. It might be comforting to people in the Democratic Party to look at the world that way and to read our history that way, but I think it's a mistake. I don't think the Democratic Party let the labor unions die. I think the Democratic Party was a major instrument for extinguishing that movement in the United States, and let me explain. All of this starts in the great crash of the 1930s. We had before that pretty much a Republican-dominated economic and political system. Republican Party was in power when the Great Depression hit in 1929, Herbert Hoover and all the rest. And out of the Great Depression came a complete realignment of politics in the United States. And at the very pinnacle of that realignment was the Democratic Party. Why? Because the Democratic Party, led at the time by Franklin Roosevelt, made a deal with the trade unions in order to deal with the Great Depression. Basically, the deal went like this. We, the Democratic Party, will stand up and do things for working people. In exchange, we want you in the working classes of America to support the Democratic Party. And the deal worked. It worked very well. Let's go through it. The Democratic Party got the enthusiastic support of the overwhelming majority of working people. They voted Mr. Roosevelt into office four successive presidential terms. No person in American history had ever served four terms. No politician had ever been as popular as Franklin Roosevelt. The Democratic Party and Franklin Roosevelt rolled into office and stayed into office across the entire Great Depression and across the entire World War II that followed. And what did the working people get? Well, when you think about it, quite a bit. They got the Social Security system for the first time in American history. When you reach age 65, your working life behind you, most of it, you could have a decent, comfortable retirement. The government made a commitment to make sure you got that as an honor to the work of your lifetime. We got unemployment insurance. If you lose your job through no fault of your own, the government will arrange to provide you with a check each week to see you through your hard times. A minimum wage was passed so that any working American would earn enough for a decent minimum standard of living. And finally, a public works program in which unemployed people, millions of them, got the jobs that would allow them to continue paying their mortgages, to keep their homes, to keep their dignity, their sense of self, and to be productive members of the community. The working people got a lot, and the Democratic Party got a lot, and they ruled the roost. But of course, somebody had to pay for all of these things. And who was that? Corporations and the rich had to pay a big chunk of it. Roosevelt told them, you must pay because you're the only ones who have the money to do this, and the country won't hold together. It'll blow apart, it'll have a revolution, it will dissolve if we don't take care of the tens of millions suffering through the Great Depression, asking only that they get a job. And enough of the corporations and the rich saw the wisdom of what Mr. Roosevelt did, so he got the taxes and he got the loans he needed to make that deal with the working people. But when the war was over, the corporations and the rich decided they had had enough of this arrangement. They didn't like it. They didn't want to keep being taxed and have their money withdrawn to help average people. And so they saw their vehicle as the Republican Party. But they also saw that in order to win, being Republicans wouldn't do it. They had to destroy the coalition that made the Democratic Party powerful. And what was that? It was the labor movement, together with the left wing of American politics, socialists, communists, and all kinds of other ists that felt themselves part of that Democratic thing called the New Deal coalition. So the Republicans who didn't like it went to work to destroy that coalition. They started with the communists, whom they painted as the evil agents of a foreign power. When they were finished destroying them, they went after another part of the coalition, the socialists, and destroyed them. And when they were done, they went after the third biggest leg of the coalition, the labor movement, and demonized them, often using the same words and language that they had used against the communists and the socialists. What did the Democratic Party do confronted with this head-on assault on the coalition that had brought them to power? The basic answer to that question is, instead of confronting and stopping and reversing the assault, they joined it. First they joined to get rid of the communists, then they joined to get rid of the socialists, and in the end, they didn't have the strength to prevent the assault on the labor movement, which they kind of half endorsed anyway. So they weren't passive. They were part of the very reaction against the success of the Democratic Party. They didn't let unions die. They destroyed the coalitions that had built the unions up. They destroyed the coalition that the unions, together with the left in American politics, had used to come to power. The Democrats were not passive. They were active. And that only makes the tragedy of their weakness today all the worse. The next update I want to deal with has to do, well, it's hard to put it. The best way to say it is the irrelevance of the government. We live in a capitalist system in which we pay an enormous amount of attention to what the government does. But I'm afraid it's because we overestimate how important the government is. Let me try to explain very concretely. In 2016, the last year of the presidency of Barack Obama, how many jobs were created in the United States? 2.34 million. By the way, 2+ million jobs were created. Mostly those jobs go to the new people entering the labor force. The population of the United States is growing. We have over 300 million people, so we add millions every year to the labor force. So when I say to you we created as a society 2.34 million jobs, it means we barely kept up with the growth in population. What about the first year of Donald Trump's administration? How many jobs were created? 2.17. Okay, so 2.34 million jobs created the last year of Obama, 2.17 million jobs created first year of Trump. Why is this interesting? First, Mr. Trump's boasts, as usual, turn out not to be accurate. He isn't the greatest job-creating president in the history of the world. He couldn't even match Mr. Obama's in his last year. So much for that, but that's not the really interesting thing. Notice how close they are. Under Obama, we created 170,000 more jobs. Now, for those people, of course, very important. But out of 2.5 million, it's kind of small potatoes. What's going on here is that what the president does doesn't matter. The number of jobs created in this country depends on the viability and functioning of the capitalist system as an economy, and the role of the government is not that important. We spend way too much time talking about what the government does or doesn't do, and way too little talking about how this system works. Finally, if the number of jobs created under Obama and Trump are very close, yet we know that the unemployment rate dropped drastically across the year 2017, the first year of Trump, then we can kind of see that it had nothing to do with Mr. Trump. What it had to do with, the reason unemployment went down, was because large numbers of unemployed people left the labor force, aren't looking for work anymore, and so they're not counted as unemployed. The decline in the number of unemployed is more about discouraged workers who don't even look anymore than it is about job creation, because as you can see, fewer jobs were created under Trump when the unemployment went down than under Obama when it didn't. Next item. Three international banks were fined early in February a total of $47 million for manipulating contracts for futures. That's a kind of security gamble in the stock market. I know this is old stories, that banks are being fined is something I keep coming back to now for years in the United States. But I wanted to read to you and draw a lesson from this latest one. Three big international banks together, $47 million. Well, I have to say again, $47 million for three huge international banks is as if I found you guilty of a major crime and insisted that the punishment was you would give me 82 cents. You would reach into your pocket, throw the change at me, and laugh. That's what ought to be done here, but in our mass media, we don't do that. Listen to the statement of United States Department of Justice Assistant Attorney General Cronin in commenting on the misdeeds of these three banks that got this mild slap on the wrist. I'm quoting. Their behavior reflects a disturbing and reckless trend of individuals and companies seeking to put illicit gains and profits above honest and law-abiding conduct. Oh, goodness. Sounds like my teacher from civics class long ago. Honest and law-abiding conduct? This fine, if that's the crime that they sought illicit gains and profits, the fine is an outrage, and it is simply the latest string in the illegal or unethical behavior of big banks. But what strikes me, as it always has, is we have yet another in the long string of criminal or unethical behavior that the leading officials in the government themselves call illicit gains and profits and reckless and disturbing. But no one seems to imagine that one response to private banks doing this is to substitute government banks, banks that are accountable to the people we elect, accountable even to us. No one seems to go that direction, even though many banks in most other capitalist countries are public. It's not as though we've never seen it. It's not as though we don't know that in North Dakota we have a bank that's public, run by that state, that's been there for 100 years and has a clear track record of making fewer mistakes and paying better dividends to the people of North Dakota than these big banks do anywhere else in the world. And why does no one say, wait a minute, if these banks are always engaged in illicit activity, maybe what they need is some sunshine, some light to come in. Maybe they need the banks to be run as cooperatives so all the people in the bank know what's going on and all the people in the bank have power so that they can catch and identify and deal with criminal and or unethical behavior. Here would be some solutions that solve this problem. Instead, we give them small fines, we slap them on the wrist, and then we act all shocked and surprised when one after another of these officials, year in and year out, is caught for every kind of crooked behavior that private enterprise has ever displayed anywhere. Before I go on, let me remind you, we maintain two websites that are there for your use. Please make use of them. They allow you to communicate to us what you like and don't like. They allow you, with a click of your mouse, to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. For those of you that are interested, there's more material that expands on what we do on these programs. The first website is Democracy at Work, all one word, democracyatwork.info. And the second website is rdwolf.com. Partner with us. Make use of what's on those websites. They're available 24/7, no charge ever whatsoever. And finally, for those of you listening on the radio or podcast, if you would like to see this program as a television program, that option is available. Please go to patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N.
Well, that's our little update from Richard Wolf here this morning. Interesting historical point about the Democrats and the labor movement. And the union I was raised in is a living example of that, the United Electrical Workers. So it rings quite true in that level. I sometimes wonder, you know, as I get older, how much, you know, how the choices were made and what the options really were. You always say, well, gee, they made a big mistake in the right turn they made right after World War II and after Roosevelt. And the coalition came apart. But the reasons the coalition came apart are the certainty in your answer there will be elusive, I believe. Because we're just trying to put that coalition back together or put a new one back together. And there's an article in the New York Times this morning about the disarray in both the Democratic National Committee and some local candidates. And there's not agreement among the Democrats, other than the fact that they can't stand Trump, you know, which is right. Now, they're all right about that. But what to do about it, and what to do about the conditions that made it possible for a guy like Trump to beat Clinton or beat anybody. Maybe that's the problem with the Clinton campaign. I don't know. But anyway, but point is that how did we get here, and what can we do about it? And it's not, I mean, one of the problems now is the labor movement has been pretty much marginalized in most areas, many areas of the country. And some people don't even know what it is. A lot of people. So that's a problem that I'm not sure that the critique of post-World War II Democrats will solve. Okay, it eliminates, but I'm not sure it solves it. All right, we're going to move on here. That little musical interlude. We're going to stick with kind of mostly Railroad Earth this morning, but I got a hankering to hear Kris Kristofferson and Darius Rucker play Poncho and Lefty for the president. Not this president, the one that came before that was actually a president. The real president now is probably Rex Tillerson. Maybe he likes Railroad Earth. Here we go.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean. Now you wear your skin like iron, your breath is hard as kerosene. You weren't your mama's only boy, favorite one it seems. She began to cry when you said goodbye and sank into your dream. While the walls of banded boys, this horse is fast as polished steel. He wore his guns outside his pants for all the honest world to feel. Pancho met his match, you know, in a desert down in Mexico. No one heard his dying word. And that's the way it goes. All the Federales say could have had him any day. They only let him slip away. Kindness, I suppose. Lefty, he can't sing the blues all night long like he used to. A dust that Pancho bit down south ended up in Lefty's mouth. The day they laid poor Pancho low, Lefty split for Ohio, where he got the bread to go. Ain't nobody knows. All the Federales say they could have had him any day. They only let him slip away. Kindness has poets tell how Pancho fell and left his sleeping in some cheap hotel. The desert quiet, Cleveland's cold. So the story ends, we're told. Pancho needs your prayers, it's true. But save a few for my man Lefty too. He only did what he had to do. And now he's growing old. All the Federales say could have had him any day. They only let him slip away.
Out of kindness, I suppose.
A few great men rightly say they could have had him any day. They only let him go so long.
Out of kindness, I suppose.
Welcome back here to the Moose Turd Cafe. We got a little confection here to serve up to you. I became joined a religion, almost, except that the religion was my love of Pablo Neruda's poetry, and I don't know Spanish. Even in translation, it's just has always overpowered me with its like sensuality, and I don't mean just sensuality in the erotic or pornographic. I mean all your senses. Okay, just he found a way to wrap in words the richness of language. Things that normally you couldn't think of a word to describe, but he did, and this even all the more amazing because it comes across even in translation. The richness of his language in Spanish becomes rich in English as well. Although it may be a totally different poem than the one he wrote, and it is. Anyway, this is called "Ode to the Atom." An ode is a poem of praise. And actually, Neruda wrote one every Sunday, or almost every Sunday, for he's got 225-some odes, so that's a lot of Sundays, okay? five or six years of odes, to be truthful. Anyway, okay, this is called Ode to the Atom, Infinitesimal Star. You seemed forever buried in metal. Hidden your diabolic fire. One day, someone knocked at your tiny door, and it was man. And with one explosion, he unchained you. You saw the world. You came out into daylight. You traveled through cities. Your great brilliance illuminated lives. You were a terrible fruit of electric beauty. You came to hasten the flames of summer. And then, wearing a predator's eyeglasses, armor, and a checked shirt, sporting sulfuric mustaches and a prehensile tail, came the warrior and seduced you. Sleep, he told you. Curl up, Adam. You resemble a Greek god, a Parisian modiste. In springtime, lie down here on my fingernail. Climb into this little box. And then the warrior put you in his pocket as if you were nothing but a North American pill. And he traveled through the world and dropped you on Hiroshima. Whereupon we awakened. The dawn had been consumed. All the birds burned to ashes. An odor of coffins, gas from tombs, thundered through space. The shape of punishment arose, hideous, superhuman, bloody mushroom, dome, cloud of smoke, sword of hell. Burning air arose, spreading death on parallel waves, reaching the mother sleeping with her child, the river fisherman and the fish, the bakery, and the bread, the engineer, and his buildings. Everything was acid, dust, assassin air. The city crumbled, its last honeycombs fell and fell suddenly, demolished, rotten. Men were instant lepers. They took their children's hand, and the little hand fell off in theirs. So from your refuge in secret mantle of stone in which fire slept, they took you, blinding spark, raging light, to destroy lives, to threaten distant existences. Beneath the sea, in the air, on the sands, in every twist and turn of the ports, to destroy seeds, to kill cells, to stunt the corolla. They destined you, atom, so as to level nations, to turn love into a black pustule, to burn heaped up hearts and annihilate blood. Mad spark, go back to your shroud, bury yourself in your mineral mantle. Be blind once again, ignore the outlaws, and collaborate with life. Collaborate with growing things. Replace motors, elevate energy, fertilize plants. You have no secret now. Walk among men without your terrible mask. Pick up your pace and the pace of picking up the fruit. Parting mountains, straightening rivers, making fertile atom, overflowing cosmic cup, returned to the peace of the vine, to the velocity of joy. Return to the province of nature and place yourself at our service. Instead of the fatal ashes of your mask, instead of the unleashed infernos of your wrath, instead of the menace of your terrible light, deliver to us your amazing rebelliousness for our grain, your unchained magnetism to found peace among men. And then your dazzling light will be happiness, not hell. Hope of morning and gift to earth. Ode to the Atom. At which point we're going to listen to Railroad Earth tell us it's important to say what you mean.
Oh,
Little bit of Railroad Earth, Say What You Mean. We'd do with, quite a bit more of that, couldn't we? Hey, we got somebody calling in here. Good morning. Welcome to the Moose Turd Cafe. Who's calling?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, buddy. How you doing there, man?
All right. You know, still here.
You're what? There was somebody tried to get rid of you?
Times this year, I'm pretty sure. Probably, you know, combination of karma and, stupidity.
Yes, right, stupidity. Well, that's the number one thing.
Stress and anxiety and, yeah, just a accumulation of a lot of drugs and bad food for a number of years.
I see, right. Well, welcome to the program, Mike. I've been, I've had a little...
Thanks, dude.
I had a little interlude here. Oh, you got an echo?
Yeah, a little bit.
I'll turn my thing down here. There you go. little bit better there. Whoa. Okay. Check, check, check.
Check. 1, 2. 1, 2.
You're coming in kind of soft this morning.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, Q, 7, 3. What?
There we go. Now I got you a little more volume on you now. Okay. Listen, there's some big news. The big news. There's lots of big news, and I haven't covered it yet, but I figured out I can use this part of the show.
The biggest news ever.
It turns out that...
Big news.
Yeah, very... News. Yeah. You're exactly right.
Me, yes. 25% tariff on the 2010. What? I'm not supposed to say that? Hey, what's happening to the Dow? Why are they doing this to me? I'm so tired of this guy, Dow. Have you seen this guy? Dow. I don't like Dow. Dow's an idiot. I'll tell you what, we're going to get it done.
I know, he claims he's not going to back down on the tariffs, but I think he is. Yeah, so.
Well, his own party is like, what?
You know, globalization is way too advanced to say no more. It just is. There's too many entanglements. You can't do it.
And, yeah, I mean, we talked about this, but I am proud of the teachers, and I'm proud of the workers, and I'm proud of the workers at Frontier.
They're on strike, too, yeah, right now. Yep. So
the teachers in Oklahoma are going on strike today.
Wow, another red state says, screw this. I mean, they don't want to pay the public employees anything. So that's right. Well, we're going to see whether the Senate, how long the Senate can hold up. It looks like all the superintendents are sticking with the teachers. I just love it. That's you know, that's profound, you know, what's going
really
on
good
here.
Thing. And I, you know, as I expressed to you, I don't want to divulge anything. We had an opportunity to talk to Representative or State Senator Ojeda.
Where's he from?
He is, I think, Logan County. I mean, oh, okay. I know he won in a very, you know, they tried to kill him, right?
I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
It was a big national story. They he was at a function and somebody beat the snot out of him and tried to kill him.
Really?
Beat him up, and turns out they were representatives of the opponent's campaign.
Oh, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, and he is, you know, he's a war veteran. He is an Army Ranger, and he's a real tough guy.
Did he do some damage to his attackers?
He's very physically strong. To come back from it, it took him a while, and you know, but he keeps himself in phenomenal shape, and he goes 100 miles an hour. He says what's on his mind. He voted for Trump.
Oh shit!
Unfortunately, yeah, and he has some serious regrets about that.
I'm so thankful of that. Okay, what?
Yeah, I know. Well, let's not.
I know. I know. No, I'm ready for people to cross the line.
He is. He is a leader in this strike. He has been on point. He's also introduced the legalization of marijuana in the state, especially medical marijuana and recreational use.
Wow. I see Vermont's gone all the way now. Yeah. They just legalized everything. You can have a party in Vermont, you know. Come to Vermont and smoke weed is kind of the thing.
You know, it's in Massachusetts. It's the medical marijuana is legal. So.
Yeah, I know. There you go. Just get yourself. It is in Maryland too. You can go over there and get yourself a prescription.
Yeah, well.
You know.
And abhorrent behavior of the West Virginia legislators is disgusting.
You mean the senators, Mitch Carmichael in particular?
Well, I'm just including all of them.
Well, the House passed.
You know, what's his name? Hall, the guy that is like the right hand. He used to be the finance guy.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, so
I know the scumbags.
Said the one woman who I just read, a representative, female representative from the Western West Virginia, was talking about how, you know, the free handouts for teachers. They should just get over it.
Yeah, take a free handful of your hair and drag you into the, you know, dungeon here.
Here's my free handout is my boot.
Yeah, right here. Take my boot.
Right in your ass. How about that?
You know, the scabs are complaining about free handout for the strankers.
I know, at the risk of, I don't want to get you or me both wound up in this sounding like, you know, another bitch session that we're just complaining about everything. But, you know, there are some there's some signs of goodwill, and especially that this, you know, these folks are in this for the long haul.
I think the teachers have done an amazing thing. I think they're redrawing the political map too while they're doing it, and without even necessarily being that their main objective, but they are doing it, and it's getting everyone's attention. And I think that the scumbags, you know, who are standing in the way, including Patricia Rucker, including the creep there in the southern part of the county, Householder, including Espinoza, you know, including basically the retarded individuals, and that is saying something, you know, that I shouldn't say.
That's not a politically correct.
It's not politically correct, but I mean, I can't plumb the depth of the stupidity.
Mentally challenged.
You know, the stupidity, and I find it so great that they're so shocked that it happened.
Oh my!
They're just shocked. I didn't think politics. What are all these people doing? You know, see, I mean, now they face and they don't know how to negotiate their way out of it.
Right, you can't, as an organization, keep your thumb down on a group of people for that length of time.
13 years without a raise.
No repercussions.
So now they've got it, and it's not even just a union thing. I mean, the superintendents are basically on strike too. I think it's great. I think it's unbelievable.
Things that are
it's beautiful.
Appalling.
And it's catching the national attention. And so you say that Oklahoma is going that way too, huh?
Yeah, heading that way. Yeah.
Oh wow! All right. Yeah. Right. Okay.
Well, they only go to school 4 days a week.
Well, here is something where you can see a tipping point. Okay. Where a lot of times, you know, you get flares that are.
By the way, that's the name of Eleanor Goldfield's show, Tipping Point.
Yeah, okay, good.
I just thought I'd mention that.
I think it's so great that the labor movement, what's left of it, is basically striking the matches here. I think it's great.
I think there are some and also at the federal level. You're seeing something that I never thought I would see. You're seeing people who actively are running away from this administration for hiring purposes.
Well, who would want to work for them?
They're attempting to recruit a lot of new employees, and there's been, I think this last week, there were four, I think, judges. Attorneys or something, appointees, and I need to read the more specific, and I apologize for that, that all said initially they were recruited to fill slots, and they all said, no, that's okay, I'm good.
Yeah, right. Well, and I see they're losing another guy. Chad Cochran is quitting from Mississippi, probably because of health. But
that's what he indicated. Yeah.
He doesn't look well, so, yeah.
No, they're... They've come out and said that it was a health issue. So, you know, I understand health issues. So I get that, but, you know, I don't have the kind of insurance that Mr. Cochran has for life.
Mm-hmm.
So, it just continues to be at the federal, state, and local level, hypocrisy after hypocrisy after hypocrisy. A whole-scale purchasing of, I've got news for the current administration. Your former buddy Sam Nunberg is not helping you.
Yeah, he's having a. He's really. I think he was drunk.
It's not fair. That's fair. I don't want it. It's not fair.
I think he was drunk on TV.
No, I don't think so. I think he might have some. Some other issues. I don't think it's alcohol.
Yeah, really? Oh, he might have been, I see.
Well, okay. I don't know. I can't put my finger on that. I just think he's just a typically, you saw the it's like a nervous breakdown neurosis happening.
No.
When you hear him talk, he says things like, I'm not going to appear, but I am going to appear, but for a limited time only. I said, you can't dictate that to Robert Mueller. He's a prosecutor. And, you know, and if you come back, if you don't come back in, good luck. Because you're going to jail. He's not going to arrest me. Oh, do you think he'll arrest me? That's what he kept saying.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
He said it to four different networks.
Yeah.
He's not gonna you think he's going to arrest me? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what happens. That's the law. You are no different than this. I've never seen such a seedy amount of legal entitlement.
I mean, these are infantile people that, you know, are caught up in something, and they don't. And the reality has only now beginning to dawn on them.
They're used to running roughshod and winning.
Well, I don't know about that, but
in their lives, and everything they do,
I think they're leading their fantasy lives.
Roger Stone is a goddamn criminal. Okay,
well,
been a criminal for a long time.
Okay, but who's going to arrest him? So we're going to find out. I hope so.
I don't know.
Hey, I want to try out something on you because I got to close the show here in a minute.
Good.
And this is called "God Is My Co-Pilot." Okay. All right. Some of the less subtle politicians down through the ages, examples would be Attila the Hun, Vlad the Impaler, okay? We know him, right? Okay. Who were never known for, you know, crying over spilled blood. They always, you know, blamed it on the father figure. Okay, like for example, Genghis Khan once said, I am the flail of God. If you had not committed great sins, God would not have sent a punishment like me upon you. And we hear this all the time. I mean, you know, like for example, George Bush was asked if he had discussed the invasion of Iraq with his father, former President George H.W. Bush, to which Bush replied, you know, he's the wrong father to appeal to in terms of strength. There's a higher father that I appeal to.
I didn't talk to Pops. I didn't get a chance to. I did speak to Jeb about Jell-O pudding.
Now,
the situation with Cosby.
That's right. Okay, so I want to try this moral out on you. A lame man in rags crawls down the aisle of a church to the altar and raises his eyes to the heavens and cries out, Lord, why have you chosen me for all of these afflictions? And suddenly, a sphere of blinding light appears just above him in the sanctuary, and a thunderous voice intones, I don't know, Charlie. There's just something about you that pisses me off.
Wow. Wow. You know, that's funny. I think I heard that same voice.
that's right. Anyway, man. So that's our
well, well, well done. Well done, John.
All right, buddy.
I'm echoing, so I should go.
Well, I'm going to hang up. It's time to get... I'm going to play a song to close this out, and that'll be it for today.
And one more time, everybody, continue to wake the F up.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There you go, buddy. Thanks,
bye.
Man. Bye-bye. Well, that was Mike Diesel calling in. I appreciate to hear from him. We're going to close out today with another, probably another Railroad Earth song of some kind, if I can. Or maybe I should do something a little different than the Railroad Earth. I mean, it's possible to close out with something maybe a little bit better. If I can just, but I got to find the right thing. To do it with. Oh, here we go. We'll do Bee's Wing. Take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next.
I was 19 when I came to town. They caught it the summer of love. They were burning babies, burning flax, the hawks against the doors. I took a job in the steamy down on Carlton Street. And I fell in love with a laundry girl who was working next to me. Well, she was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing, so fine a breath of wind might blow her away. She was a lost child, well, she was running wild. She said, as long as there's no price on love, I'll stay. And you wouldn't want me any other way. Brown hair zigzag around her face, and I look at half surprise. Like a fox caught in the headlights, there was animal in her eyes. She said, young man, oh, can't you see? I'm not the factory kind. If you don't take me out of here, I'll surely lose my mind. Well, she was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing, so fine that I might crush her where she lay. She was a lost child, well, she was running wild. She said, as long as there's no price on love, I'll stay. And you wouldn't want me any other way. Towns with big fruit down in Kent, and we could tingle lamps and pots and knives wherever we went. And I said that we might settle down, get a few acres dark, fire burning in the hearth and babies on the rug. She said, oh man, you foolish man, it surely sounds like hell. You might be lord of half the world, you'll not own me as well. Well, she was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wing, so fine a breath of wind might blow her away. She was a lost child, well, she was running wild. She said, as long as there's no price on love, I'll stay. You wouldn't want me any other way. We was camping down the Gower one time, the work was pretty good. She thought we shouldn't wait for that frost, and I thought maybe we should. We was drinking more in those days, and tempers reached a pitch, and like a fool I let her run with a rambling knee. Now the last I heard, she's sleeping rough back on the Derby beat, white horse in her hip pocket and a wolfhound at her feet. And they say she even married once a man named Romany Brown, but even a gypsy caravan was too much settling down. And they say her flower is faded now, hard weather and hard booze, but maybe that's just the price you pay for the chains you refuse. Well, she was a rare thing, fine as a bee's wind, and I miss her more than ever words could say. If I could just taste all of her wildness now, if I could hold her in my arms today, well, I wouldn't want her any other way.